This is Charlottesville Tomorrow. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonprofit organization engaging the public on critical quality of life issues so we make informed choices for our community's future. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org. On November 3, 2015, voters in the city of Charlottesville go to the polls to elect their representatives to three seats on the Charlottesville City Council. This recording is Brian Wheeler's August 20, 2015 interview with Republican Anson Parker. Other candidates in this race include Independent Scott Bandy, Democrat Wes Bellamy, incumbent Democrat Kathy Galvin, and Democrat Mike Signer. Mr. Parker, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio recording and written transcript for this interview will be available online. Information from this interview will be used in the compilation of the Nonpartisan Voter Guide being co-produced by Charlottesville Tomorrow, The Daily Progress, and the League of Women Voters. Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues primarily related to land use, transportation, public education, and community design. As you are aware, the first two questions you will be asked have been provided in advance. For the others, you have been provided only the topic in advance. All City Council candidates will be asked the same questions. We ask that you keep these questions confidential until all candidates have been interviewed. Each candidate will be provided an opportunity to review the excerpts selected for the voter guide before its publication. Are you ready to start?
Yes, sir.
Question number one. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on Charlottesville City Council.
All right. Well, I grew up in this region, and I spent 19 years specifically in Charlottesville. I grew up in Lexington, Virginia. And in the time I've been here, I've lived in, I think, seven different neighborhoods. I've worked in the service industry. I've worked in construction. I've worked in research. And I'm presently a web developer. So I've had a lot of broad experience. I think the number one thing I learned in construction is that when you're trying to hire someone, you're hopefully getting someone who wants to put themselves out of a job. And that's something I'm bringing to the table with City Council. If elected, I would work really hard to not be there again. And I really think there's an opportunity to do that in Charlottesville using technology effectively. And I do have a lot of experience building stuff, building roads, building underground utilities. I spent 3 years doing that kind of work, so I have a lot of real hands-on experience actually building the systems that keep a city running. And so those are two things that are fairly unique. And I've been a web developer for almost 18 years professionally, running a small business. And so I am already working to build technologies, working with City Hall to automate transparency for the city of Charlottesville. And again, I think that's an opportunity to really put politicians out of a job, something everybody should be excited about.
Question number two, what is your top priority for action by the City Council if you are elected?
Absolutely, 100% transparency. I believe that every request that comes into City Hall should be available online, and that one of the things that you realize when you look at the City Council agenda meetings is that the ideas that come into City Hall go through legal review, they go through environmental review, they go through planning review, and that's all very much a black box. It really is. But that's really where the main decisions are made, because those are highly qualified people that are reviewing the work. I'm working on a bathroom right now, and I'm talking to Tom Elliott, and they know what they're talking about. And when you look at what happens in City Council, it's a lot of bobbleheading, because really the tough decisions were made by the professionals who reviewed the work to be done. And so what I hope to bring is this procedural transparency so that people can understand how things happen in the city. And, if you fail, say I'm working on a bathroom, right? And somebody looks at my plans and they're like, yeah, that's not good enough. Well, that failure should be transparent also, so that someone else trying to build another bathroom will have the opportunity to look at how I try to do things and make improvements. Similarly with small business, if you apply for a change of zoning, really at the end of the day, you mostly just see the yes or no, but you don't see the process of how that took place. And so it's a lot of there's a lot of wasted time. People just redoing the same steps and making the same mistakes because they can't learn from other people. And that's one of the costs associated with a black box system.
Question number three. What steps should council and the school board take to help build a more sustainable school budget?
You know, one of the things that's going on right now over at UVA is that they're trying to attract STEM women, you know, science, technology, engineering, math, and they're having a really hard time keeping these highly qualified technical women employed. Number one concern for a lot of these women is, you know, good education and affordable education for their kids. And, you know, if they live out in the county, having a place for their kids to go to school that isn't an extra 40 minutes on their day. I think there's a, you know, if they want to really attract, if UVA really wants to attract the kind of women that it says it wants to attract, I think they should reach out to the school systems and, you know, one of the things that they address in the Blue Ribbon Commission is that, you know, city schools only charge, I think, $1,100 for the first student, whereas Albemarle charges $4,400 or something like that for the first student. I think UVA should, you know, be looking at making up that difference if it really wants to attract the kind of women it says it does.
Question number four. Business leaders and social service agencies have told local government that new investments are sorely needed in the area of early childhood education. Will you make pre-K education and quality child care a priority, and if so, how?
Absolutely, and I mean, I think that's, you know, I grew up in Lexington. We had an outstanding education system, right? I think from 1975 to 1996, we actually had zero dropouts. I mean, the rates that, like, you know, like 100% graduation, right? I mean, like actually no child left behind kind of stuff. And so absolutely, we need to have pre-K. And I think, again, this is one of those places where I think we should be leaning on UVA. They keep saying they have this huge commitment to attracting STEM women, and I don't see them really putting their money where their mouth is. So I'd like to, I think we should be leveraging that very seriously.
Question number five. Each growth area in Albemarle County has a community advisory committee appointed by the Board of Supervisors, which provides input on program and policy decisions, including the implementation of the comprehensive plan. In what ways would you like to see city government engage neighborhoods to ensure a diversity of voices is involved in the implementation of the city's small area plans?
This is, you know, this can get kind of complex. The baseline is, I think, you know, I mean, we can probably reach about 90% of the population through their phones. I mean, the number of people who are using smartphones is astonishing. And I think it's, you know, one of the cool things about doing transparency correctly is that you can then put it into classrooms. You know, I think if you're 16 and you're informed, you should have a say in what's going on in this community. You probably know a whole lot more than somebody who just moved here. You know, that's just how it is. There are, you know, one of the other things you can do is look at how things have been gerrymandered over the years. You know, even in Charlottesville, we have gerrymandering, right? I mean, that's how things work. You know, people break up the pie to suit their needs at the time. One of the advantages of that is that you can do polling and really look at where people are living and say, well, if you're in 10th and Page, you know, that's pretty cool that you're actually forming, you know, making a strong opinion because you've been neglected sufficiently over the years that, you know, you're kind of used to just nodding your head and going, well, it's not going to work out for me anyhow. So I think there's an opportunity there to use some of the districting that's been done to get a better block consensus. Another thing to look at is proxy voting. And this is something that's really taken off in Argentina, in Russia, among these really disenfranchised communities, is that they will say, well, I'm not an expert. You know, they'll go to a region and they'll get everybody registered online. And people within those communities will say, well, you know, so-and-so down the street really does know education. And whatever they go with, that's what I'm going to go with. And see, you know, and so they get a weighted vote that way, this proxy voting system. And I think implementing something like that would be incredibly exciting. Something where we go to each neighborhood and say, well, we've got these goals. Who would you listen to? Whose voice would you like to hear speaking on the matter? And it's a much more fluid model of organization. And I think it aspires to lessen the, you know, the kind of corruption that takes place when you elect officials for any length of real time.
Question number 6. Describe a part of local government that would benefit from increased cooperation by the city, county, and or the University of Virginia, and that you would make a priority.
You know, we've had a lot of real disastrous crimes in this region, right? I mean, that's something that we all know about. We had a serial rapist. We've had, you know, we've had multiple serial rapists. We've had some really horrible stuff happen in a wonderful town. And we should be able to fix that. So one of the things that I've talked to Tim Longo about, and I think he feels strongly about, is coordinating video online. And this is something we've talked about. We've looked at how would you create a wide area network of cameras. I mean, if you're in public, by definition, you know, you have no right to sense privacy in public. You know, I grew up in Lexington. We had no privacy anyway. I mean, there was no such thing. You know, I mean, that just didn't exist. But you know, so I think, but I really think in Charlottesville, we need to put our foot down and say, no, if you're in public, you're safe. And it needs to be more than just the college area. It needs to be more than, you know, I mean, this should be Cherry Avenue. This should be, you know, Park Street. This should be Rugby Road. Seriously, you know, I mean, everybody has webcams. They're ubiquitous. The technology is affordable. I think we looked at like $10 a month per camera. That is just stupidly cheap. You know, I mean, we could have 1,000 cameras running in this town. And, yeah, I think we would put a real dent in violent crime.
Question number 7. What role should City Council play in decisions about good urban design and placemaking?
Limited. you know, I mean, I think you know, the landmark is landmark. I think the flats is flatlining. I think that what we're seeing from City Council is a real, you know, it just seems incredibly disconnected from what average people want. So I'm very skeptical about the role of City Council in mandating much of anything. This is one place where I think citizen polling should be really focused on. That said, I mean, I would like to think that we could facilitate that. You know, I think City Council's role in that case should just be to facilitate the discussion, but to really leave as much of that decision making to the people who it will impact most strongly. You know, City Council, very few of them, you know, have had real working class jobs. You know, they just, you know the, so a lot of these impacts aren't things that they're used to even thinking about.
Question number 8. What is your top transportation priority and how will it be funded?
You know, when I moved here, riding a bike was fun. Okay, it was awesome. You could ride a bike and it was great. And that really stopped being the case about 10 years ago. You know, it's terrifying to get on a bicycle in Charlottesville. I mean, you just have to be, you have to really be gung-ho about it. And I've been hit a couple times. I mean, everybody who is riding a bike in Charlottesville has been hit at some point or will get hit. You just will. Welcome to Charlottesville. I think we need to do something, we really need to do something about that. We say we like green transportation. It's a good game to talk. I don't see it happening. I think we should really limit UVA students driving in town. I think, you know, I mean, I think if you're 18 and you need a car, you're just lying. That's not true. You don't. I don't know that. Now, in Lexington, you know, Washington and Lee students couldn't have cars for the first 2 years. Just couldn't have them. I think we should go with that. I really do. I think we should limit the number of cars on the streets and try and make it a little safer. I mean, I've been hit walking down the street. So, you know, how do we fund that? You know, we could partially fund it by not paying our city council. That'd be a great place to start. Personally, I think people should run from politics, not for it. Here I am running, so I don't know what that leaves me.
Question number 9. What areas of the current comprehensive plan will you concentrate on for implementation, improvement, and or monitoring?
You know, I think every aspect of the comprehensive plan will be improved by transparency. I think making every action that City Hall makes FOIA-able is a really obvious thing. And I think there's a little bit of skepticism, perhaps, that people are going to really find fault with City Hall. And I think that's really unlikely. They do a great job. I know a lot of those people personally. They're hardworking. I think what you're going to find is that we get a really good deal out of our City Hall and our city staff. I think they're not just affordable, they're kind of on the cheap side, actually. But at the same time, we haven't even caught up with Albemarle County in terms of technology. They have an online system that has an API that has, you know, that you can do a fair amount of data mining in. And we just don't have that. And no matter what we do, we really need to make sure that our process is transparent.
Question number 10. What specifically should City Council do to promote employment, and what types of jobs will be your priority?
Well, it won't be making more hoteliers or, I think what we really, there's some great businesses in town. Let's talk about this. I mean, O Shoes with Casey Kerrigan. I mean, here's a woman who's just brilliant, and I don't say that often, but she really is. And she is insourcing all just incredible types of work. And so she's got employees that she's training in machining, you know, running a water jet. These are really powerful tools that allow for an incredible amount of innovation. And she has taken shoe design to 11, right? But what that means is that she's trained a lot of people in all these types of machinery, and now they're like viable employees who can make a living. Gaston and Wyatt. I worked there for a while, and those guys make a living, okay? I mean, as a skilled laborer, they make a good living, okay? And they have skills, you know? So, I mean, you look at Design Electric. They have skills. You look at, you know, these are people who come to the town and provide, you know, value upon value. I mean, they provide value to the community, but then in their personal lives, they have value, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that, like, working at a restaurant, you know, that's a great industry also, but it's, you know, there's a lot to be said for trying to bring in some small industry into Charlottesville, and I think it's totally missing. We haven't done enough to attract it. Part of that, I think, is that it's, our process for attracting businesses is kind of wonky. I mean, we've still got a bunch of PDF forms that you got to fill out online. If you want to make changes, you have to go through a kind of a black box process. I think we should look at some of these businesses, Relay Foods, you know, some of these web development companies, Willow Tree. We should be looking at them and asking them what we could do to help them and improve their process for growth. Because they're paying people. I mean, you don't have to go to Willow Tree apps and ask if they're making a living wage, okay? Like, that's not happening, all right? You know, when they start adding these extra hotels, you know, we're creating jobs. No, you're creating lousy jobs. Like, do you want to go change bed sheets, man? No, you don't. Like, is that a skill that's going to, like, you know, 20 years ago I was changing bed sheets, and now I'm changing bed sheets and pillows. You know, like, really? Like, that's not a career. We shouldn't be building jobs. We should be building careers.
Question number 11. Do you support the redevelopment of Charlottesville's public housing sites to create vibrant, mixed-income, and mixed-use neighborhoods without displacement of existing residents?
I want to go one step further. Yes, I also am really excited about some of the stuff that HUD is doing nationally, and this happens to be a real conservative plank here. People ask why I run as a Republican, and I say this is actually the main reason. Because the only plank in the Charlottesville Conservative Party is that we work to give the people who are living in federal housing their homes. It reduces government, reduces overhead cost, it increases pride in the neighborhood, lowers criminal recidivism, and this has been shown time and again. I have a, you know, an inside track to HUD right now. My sister is the deputy director. And so I was on the phone with her yesterday talking about how do we fix the housing problem. You know, what can we do to improve the housing situation in Charlottesville? And here again, and it sounds like I'm beating a horse here. I'm not. It's that we don't have good transparency. And as a result of not having good transparency, when we go to HUD, they don't know how to talk to us. You know, having a nice feeling or having a strong opinion doesn't matter a whole lot if you don't have a nice Excel spreadsheet with all your data. And if you can't go to HUD with clean data, they can't help you. They can't help you give these homes back to the people who live in them. Obviously, giving somebody a home who's been on subsidized housing for years, that's going to take a transition phase, right? I mean, you need money for that. You don't just hand somebody the keys to the car and say, good luck, man. You know, you train them. You give them some, you provide a buffer so that it doesn't fail. But that's something we should all be really excited about. And again, it's something that if we implement here in Charlottesville, we actually have the opportunity to scale that. You know, transparency scales well, actually. So if we do a good job of improving our understanding of how we're doing the process now, you know, we will be helping out the entire country, you know, and that's like the real think globally, act locally mantra. I mean, we have an opportunity to put that in action. And that's incredibly exciting. You know, I look forward to working with any of the groups who are interested in talking about that. I'm doing all this work. You know, I am doing a lot of work pro bono. I'm not taking donations. I like to make that clear. I don't want anybody's money. If you want to help me with any work, drop me a line, but I really don't want your money. I think we need to deal with that on a separate note. But no, I mean, we can, you know, and I hear criticism. Well, if you give somebody a house, what if they destroy it? You know, and I tell people, you know, looking at the numbers, 90% of the time, you've improved somebody's life and you've saved a ton of money. And with the money you've saved, that 10% of the people who are still going to destroy things, you can cover that. You can fix that. That's not going to be outlandish. Use some of that money to fund some of the other stuff we want to do in town. You know, I mean, there's an incredible amount of resource here in Charlottesville.
So just to follow up on that, are you suggesting that the homes that are currently public housing, that once redevelopment happens, they become owners of their own homes, and then there isn't public housing?
As much as possible, we give them their homes. Sell them to them for a dollar, I think, is the traditional model.
Okay.
Yeah, that we actually give them their homes.
Yep.
That they have an equity stake in the community. You know, I mean, you look at what's going on in the education. You know, when a kid grows up and they live in some place that everybody knows is kind of, you know, on welfare, that sets them off on the wrong foot. It's not right. You got to fix that. Kids should be going to school and be proud of where they live, you know? And if you don't, you're going to have problems down the road. That's just real. That's how that works. So if we care about our kids, we really need to look out for them from the get-go and make sure that they grow up in housing that they're proud of.
Anson Parker, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow.
Thank you very much, Brian.